Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by DraftKings. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, with my co-host, Justin Penick. We got our mailbag, our first mailbag of the offseason. Our schedule's a little off. We're usually Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But because we had a Thursday night game, it's Friday, Tuesday, Friday. So we got a good amount of questions. Justin, how are you doing?
Bobby Skinner, yeah, the Thursday night game's throwing me off. I want to think it's later in the week than it actually is, but sucks to suck. It's only Monday when we're recording this. But I'm feeling interesting about this Giants team, and I don't know if we're going to touch on it in this mailbag at all, as this motion that I just made with my hands near my man boobs was quite interesting, if anybody wants to gif it. So I'm feeling weirdly, blindly optimistic about this Giants team because of my optimistic emotions about this offense. How are you?
I'm not feeling great. I think we're 0-2 and 0-2 as a whole, and we can't expect the division to be bad every year. That's where I'm at, and I'm getting annoyed because I have to have my phone open. The reason I have my phone open and you're hearing notifications is because I'm about to read the new Patreons. We got Logan Downing. He's really downing the mood since he's been a Patreon. Nothing good's happened since he's joined.
Wow.
DK stands for Donkey Kong or DraftKings, presented by DraftKings. We got Andrew, no last name, just bland old Andrew. Mm-hmm. We got Cheyenne Dietz, maybe like our third or fourth like female patron. So how about that, Cheyenne?
We have a YouTube subscriber and commenter whose name is Cheyenne, and I wonder if there's any
Cheyenne
relation.
I think that's probably Cheyenne. We got Jim Shea, Shea's Concrete. Rich Oval. We got Stylish Llama. I just don't think it's Komoteyama. Bradley Hines, Hines 57, Hines Ward. Remember that when that one Boston radio person said that Julian Edelman has the same Hall of Fame case as Hines Ward, and Hines Ward has like 50 more touchdowns?
Huh.
John M. M. And the M stands for miserable. Tahal Naik and Sean Alisi. Justin, who are these people who have only been, we haven't won a game since they've joined?
Well, there's a lot of patrons who haven't witnessed a win since they've signed up to be a Patreon member. And Bobby Skinner's wearing a sweatshirt right now. Guarantee it's like 85 degrees in Florida, and he's talking about being miserable. And you can be miserable with us, but most notably celebrate victory when you come hang out with us on Sunday as we react to the games. You can be miserable or celebrate victory with us when you go to patreon.com/talkinggiants. $2 a month plus some other tiers if you want to support. $2 a month, patreon.com/talkinggiants. Bobby will send you a free magnet, and you get entered into some shirt raffles, and you get to hang out with us as we record the podcast. Patreon.com/talkinggiants.
All right. Before we get into the mailbag, did you see that Kenny Golladay admitted that he was yelling at Jason Garrett?
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it on the pod on Friday, and it's like, you know, yelling happens, you know, like, it's like, that's fine. You know, it's, you'd rather not be yelling because you're doing good, but, I went back and watched the videos. Like, I think he's yelling at Garrett, and he basically admitted that. So we'll see. And we're going to talk about Garrett and Jones and all of that. And anything else that we need to touch up on before we send it away?
No.
All right. Take it away, Steve from Blue's Clues.
Mail time.
Mail time.
The mail's here. Come on.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Thanks, Steve from Blue's Clues, who became a... Justin, let's get into the mail. Steve from Blue's Clues has like kind of made a comeback since we did our last mailbag episode too, by the way.
Some are saying that it is because of Talking Giants that Steve was able to make that comeback.
Hey, he's a big part of our show. Oh, I have the new Steve from Blue's Clues stickers, by the way.
Oh, our friend Julian made those.
Yes. All right, Justin, let's get into the mail.
Get into the mail. Find those stickers as I ask a pair of three questions to kick off our mailbag session. So, Benjamin at B.S. Colo. I'm guarantee it's just B. Scolo, and I put the S in there for no reason. Big Rutgers fan. Go RU. Whose performance thus far is more concerning, Leonard Williams or James Bradbury? Then, Ben Butler asked, at Ben Butler 7, has there been an increase of double teams on Leo which has resulted in him getting less pressure? Or does it show the impact of Tomlinson had on this D-line and that Dexter, Danny, Austin Johnson aren't the same caliber of player that Tomlinson was? And then final question that's paired with these three, Mark Masura Jr. at Mark Masura. Is losing Dalvin Tomlinson the reason for the defensive regression? Was he crucial to Leonard Williams' season last year?
So I put all these together because I think it's one big Leonard Williams conversation. And honestly, you know, the question is Bradbury or Leonard Williams, who are you more disappointed with? I think Leonard Williams is the player I'm most disappointed with on the entire New York Giants roster, is Leonard Williams. You know, and even going back and watching the film, I'm not even disappointed in James Bradbury for week two. Patrick Graham kind of put him in a position to be screwed. They were playing him very far off, and I do expect that to be changed. So going back and looking at the film, you see James Bradbury getting beat, but then it's like, man, he goes put in bad situations. And then he made that interception, so I don't even really feel bad about Bradbury. But Leonard Williams has zero sacks, one tackle for a loss, two pressures. I mean, he has been a big fat zero so far this season, and we are counting on him. And I don't think it's like, oh, his you know, got his contract and he got lazy. Like, Leonard Williams has always been a productive player. He last year was a career year, but he's always been a really productive player. And it's just he has not made an impact, but with stats or even when you're just watching him.
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing is that he should have two sacks on the season. He should have had a sack on Teddy Bridgewater last week, and he should have had a sack on Heinicke this past weekend, you know, when Heinicke was, like, rolling out of the pocket. I think the Heinicke one was more of a bad miss than the Bridgewater one, because the Bridgewater one, he was already out of the pocket. He already had momentum, so Bridgewater gave him a stiff arm. Heinicke wasn't even moving that much. He got moving after Leonard Williams missed the sack. So, but even besides, like, let's just say Leonard Williams comes down with those two sacks, and those would be two impact plays. But still, this past week, he had no QB hits. He had no pressures. At least last week, I think he had some three pressures and he had two QB hits. This past week against Washington, it was nothing. And Bobby, you're completely right. You know, the next-gen stats kind of back up. The cushion stats with Terry McLaurin was quite large. And even you looked at the touchdown at which Terry McLaurin scored last Thursday against Washington, it's like, well, we're on the 20-yard line. They're on the 15-yard line. Why are you playing James Bradbury back more than 10 yards past the sticks? It just made zero sense. I'm almost at a point where if a talented skill position player, let's say this Sunday, like Calvin Ridley or Kyle Pitts, right? If a talented skill position player goes up on the sideline and makes a contested catch or a contested grab over one of our corners, I'm almost like okay with it. It's like, tip your hat, you got him. We'll get the pass deflection next time. But the fact that we're just getting killed by this death of a thousand cuts approach because we're playing off ball, it's like it's almost like a flashback to 2019 with James Betcher. The fact that that's how we're losing is not alarming, but it's frustrating. And that scheme, whereas Leonard Williams just not being productive, is Leonard Williams not being productive.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, like Leonard Williams is the best pass rusher on this team right now.
Yeah,
you know,
supposed
and
to
the
be.
Pass rush has been the biggest issue for the defense more so than this. Like, they have not been able to generate a pass rush at all.
Yeah,
and our standards for it were low, and they are not meeting it. Like, the pass rush has been really bad. Ojulari has made a play here and there. O'Shane Zimenez has done zilch.
Yep.
Lorenzo Carter has really done nothing in the pass rush game. Dexter Lawrence hasn't done it. And then Leonard Williams, who is expected to not have sacks every game, but to be pressure the QB, get him out of the pocket, just has not done that. You know, where James Bradbury, it's not his fault the way they aligned in the past two games. And I expect Patrick Graham to make those changes. But what Patrick Graham can't do is try and scheme up pressure all game long and blitz, blitz, blitz. Like, at some point, you're not going to be get there with four, be one of the best in the league, but you have to get there on some reps, and they're just not getting there on any reps with four. You had the Azeez Ojulari sack and, like, one other play, and that was when Leonard Williams missed the sack.
Yep.
You know, was that play where Ojulari forced Heinicke up in the pocket. And they just have not been able to generate pressure. And they've not even, our low expectations for generating pressure, they're not meeting.
Yeah, I will say it's a little bit more justified for the pass rush not being there week two versus week one. Week one, they deserve all the heat in the world because Teddy Bridgewater was holding on to the ball. His average time to throw was over 3 seconds. Taylor Heinicke's average time to throw this past weekend was 2.44 seconds. That was the second fastest in the NFL this past weekend. So I very much can understand. I'm not going to fault a pass rush if a quarterback's consistently
part of that with the soft zone too.
Yeah, and getting rid of the ball in less than 2.5 seconds. The main problem, I don't know if it's going to come up in this mailbag, but the main problem for the Giants defense this past weekend was yards after the catch. They allowed a total of 144 yards after the catch. And their average yards after the catch total last year as a defense was some like 54 yards. And that was like middle of the pack, probably a little bit below average. Bobby, last year, the Texans allowed the most yards after the catch per reception. I'm sorry, the most yards after the catch per game on a per game basis. And they allowed, I believe it was 142 yards per game on average, yards after the catch. So the Giants against Washington, if you go by the 2020 standards in total, they were bad. Like, that is the worst that you can get in the National Football League in terms of allowing yards after the catch. So, again, the approach of the death by the thousand cuts kind of got to the Giants again. And, you know, do you have anything to say about that before we maybe even move to this Dalvin? I want to talk about this whole Dalvin thing, too, because so many people are talking about Dalvin Tomlinson.
Yeah, last thing I'll say on it is the soft zone is something that they're going to play a good amount of zone. But James Bradbury shouldn't be playing 10 yards off.
Correct.
And it doesn't mean you have to, you know, play press man coverage, you know. It doesn't mean that. Even though they had success running man coverage this past week, where versus Denver, they really didn't have a lot of success doing it. But Bradbury should be playing up. You shouldn't be playing him that far off, especially when there was no hard, flat defender. So that's what I'll say. That's my biggest critique of Patrick Graham, is that they're not playing James Bradbury like he's a top cornerback, and he is.
Yeah, I agree. And even Adoree Jackson, too. Where I actually thought previously on the stats report video last week, I actually thought that Graham was running more man because his blitz rate was so high, when that's actually not the case. And I, you know, Dan Duggan was able to get his hands on the coverage stats, which coverage rates, that's not something that's public. That's something that I'm basically relying on Seth Walder, who the big heads, the media heads, they all have access to, I think, next-gen data that the general public doesn't have access to, and coverage rates is one of those things that the general public doesn't have access to. And Dan Duggan basically said, and I talk about it more on the stats report, but Dan Duggan basically said the Giants' defense, in terms of their cover three rates and their cover two rates, they're running it the same as they were last year, where it's not like they're running more man and guys are getting beat by man. No, they're running cover three and cover two the same amount as they were last year. And I would say them running cover two, at least looking at the explosive plays the Giants have allowed, them running cover two has hurt them more than running cover three.
Yep. The Dalvin part.
Dalvin part.
I disagree. I think I think we see the defense not playing good, and it's like, okay, what's changed? And it's Dalvin. Now, I will say, there is times where you watch and you miss Dalvin. You know, Danny Shelton is, you know, he's not eating double teams the way that Danny Shelton can, and we always knew that he wasn't going to be able to pull off the athletic plays that Dalvin was, where, you know, both those guys can start the pop on the O-line and eat up those double teams, but Dalvin can finish those plays. We were never expecting Shelton to do that. But Shelton's like, he's not eating up those double teams. So you definitely, there's times where you miss Dalvin, but I don't think it has any correlation to Leonard Williams. In fact, maybe I would even say B.J. Hill not being here might have more correlation to Leonard Williams than Dalvin, because, you know, yeah, B.J. Hill was that pass-rushing defensive tackle.
Yeah, where now the Giants are forced to run more two edge rush or two defensive lineman sets versus being confident in running those three defensive lineman sets. You know, they would run, Bobby, last year, they would run three defensive lineman sets a ton on third down because their interior defensive line room, it was stacked. And it's just not that stacked anymore in terms of the ability of the pass rushers in the interior defensive line room, because Danny Shelton and Austin Johnson are both these nose tackles where you don't feel confident in them rushing the passer. Danny Shelton does not look good. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not a film buff, but You know, every time I watch him and every time my eyes on him, he's getting moved off the ball. I was never expecting him to be this athlete where he's making plays and he's making tackles for losses. But even with how big he is, he's getting moved off the ball. And Austin Johnson has looked a world better than he has. I'm not happy with Danny Shelton.
Yeah, me either. I mean, he can turn it around, but he hasn't done what we expected him to do.
Right. But the errors on this defense, final point, the errors on this defense, it's because they're allowing yards after the catch, and the secondary that used to make plays on the football when the ball was in the air, and by the time it got to the skill position players and they would force an incompletion, those problems are not core. They're not as a result of losing Dalvin Tomlinson. They're not getting killed in the run game, you know, and Taylor Heinicke got rid of the ball in 2.44 seconds week two. And Dalvin Tomlinson was never racking up pressures, racking up QB hits, racking up sacks.
We looked up the numbers. Almost all of Leonard Williams' sacks came with, like, Dalvin Tomlinson off the field. Correct. I think, like, two or three came with Dalvin on the field.
All right.
Week two of football is in the books, and now it's time to review the tape. And get ready. We've been reviewing the tape. Get ready for week three with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off another action-packed week, DraftKings is giving new customers $150 instantly when they bet $1 in any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any week one game to receive $150 in free bets instantly. If sportsbooks are not available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code JohnBoy to receive $150 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code JohnBoy this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sports for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana 1-800-9. With it. All right, next question.
Yeah, all right. So for all those people that were getting mad at us that we don't talk about the defense enough because this is an offensive league, you can suck it because we just spent 15 minutes on it.
Suck it.
All right, Louis A. Angiolio. Think I just said that wrong. I don't have my glasses on. Angiolio. I think I said
Angelo.
And there you go. That we just could say that. At NY_Lewis12. NY_Lewis12. Is it possible to move one of Pear or Solder to guard and have them both on the field? Or do you believe Bredesen could be the best option there until Lemieux returns? And if one of them has success at guard, do you think Lemieux can ultimately lose his spot? And then also, Westlock at Wesley Westicles, one of my favorite Twitter users. How would you rank our current offensive line members 1 through 8 on confidence, performance, potentials? Andrew Thomas, the lone bright spot.
Okay, so the basis of this question is Matt Parrott playing guard, and he practiced there today or yesterday when you're listening to this. Now, I wouldn't get too crazy into that because right now their only backup offensive linemen are Matt Parrott and Matt Skura. You know, they had David Moa working at guard at some reps in practice, you know. So I wouldn't freak out about that. Yeah, you didn't see that? Duggan tweeted it.
David Moe is a defensive lineman, for those who don't know.
Yeah, Solder, absolutely not. And then Shane Lemieux in this question, I think Shane Lemieux is done for the year.
No.
Everything's pointing to it without, like, them trying. It seems like he's done for the year, which sucks because he looked improved in the 20 snaps that he got to start the season. So Parrott moving to guard. I think he should start at right tackle. But I don't think it's that crazy. And he did it a little bit at UConn. You know, Clapback Sports, you know, pointed out. Like, he played a little bit of guard when he first went to UConn. He doesn't struggle with bull rushes, you know, and his biggest issue is opening up his hips. He doesn't really have to deal with that at the guard spot as a pass rusher. And once he's locked on, guys, like, he's beautiful. It's just that initial punch opening the hips. But once, like, Matt Parrott is in front of you and has his hands on you, it's good. And you're like, well, he doesn't punch great. Well, guess what? You don't have to have the greatest punch at guard, and his arms are so long that it would make up for it compared to other guys. And you say, well, stronger defensive tackles could get into him and bull rush him, maybe. But I wouldn't really the only thing you could say against it would be the frame, which is like, that's just a big frame than guard. But I also remember people like telling us, no, Nick Gates cannot play center because of, you know, he's 6'5" or 6'6". Like, so I would think he should start at right tackle. You know, but like, I kind of would be intrigued of it as a pass blocker. And honestly, as a run blocker, like Matt Parrott's an improvement over Nate Solder. And he might be a better run blocker than Ben Bredesen, too. Won't be better than a guy like Shane Lemieux or Will Hernandez. But, like, I don't know. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. Like, I'm kind of intrigued by it.
Yeah. Especially because he's an athlete. And if there's...
He can pull well. He pulled at UConn a ton.
Yeah, if there's certain issues that he can't fix a guard and putting him at... that he can't fix a tackle and putting him at guard would... mask it, and we may never look at Matt Parrott as, oh, he's going to turn into an elite, awesome guard, but if he could be serviceable, and if that's the way that you can save the draft pick, because at this point, Bobby, after seeing 2 weeks of Nate Solder, and the fact that Matt Parrott didn't even rotate in there, that's damning. It's pretty damning, and, a lot of people said the Giants should have done that with Ereck Flowers way before... Another team did, the Miami Dolphins and the Washington football team. They put Ereck Flowers at guard, and he's still rolling around the NFL somewhere, and he's playing. So if they got to do it, especially because they need to out of necessity, then go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I mean, I would try it. I think he would be I'm pretty confident he'd be a good pass blocking guard. And you're like, well, the height. Like I don't know. I think there's bigger issues than that. Like, I know everyone's going to comment like, oh, it's just not a guard frame. It's not a guard. Okay. But you know what? This isn't a cookie cutter league. You know, not everything fits perfectly in the way. Like, Ben Cleveland's a 6'6" guard and 350 pounds. Like, we like him. So it's not, wouldn't be perfect, but I would explore that opportunity and see how it looks.
Yeah. I also think so much of our offense is going to be out of the shotgun for the remainder of the year. Cause I think this Giants offense is finally realizing things that work. Where most of their snaps and most of the plays came out of the shotgun against Washington this past weekend. So Saquon Barkley runs better out of the shotgun. Daniel Jones throws better out of the shotgun. So that's further separation that you have at the snap of the ball from guard to quarterback, if that's something that you really care about. So,
but the last point is that I think that he's practicing at guard this week because they're going to sign somebody by the time the games start Sunday. They will sign some type of offensive lineman, whether it's calling up Corey Cunningham or Barton or bringing back Slade or Wiggins or someone from another practice squad. There will be someone signed by then.
I also don't want them to waste time. If they think that this is a realistic option, then do it, right?
He hasn't practiced a guard in the NFL until yesterday.
At least start practicing him there further. Like, don't just sign somebody off the street to take, like, those second string reps and then continue to just have Matt Parrott sit on the bench. You know what I mean?
Matt Parrott should start at right tackle. Nate Solder does. I'm going to talk about Nate Solder a little bit when we get to our run game question. Wes's question, the 1-8. I'm going to go quick through mine.
Sure.
And I'm including Lemieux. Let's just pretend Lemieux is healthy since he's 1 of the 8 right now. I would go Thomas, Lemieux, Hernandez, Bredesen, Parrott, Price, Skura, Solder.
That sounds
Thomas,
right.
Thomas is the one bright spot. Lemieux, he looked good, and I think he can improve. Hernandez is that baseline. Bredesen, there's some hope there, but he's not better than Hernandez right now. Parrott is just potential. Price, I'm kind of out on. Skura could be a serviceable player, and Solder, he's done.
Fair. Yeah.
All right, next question.
All right, next question is coming from Rahul at R. Bajaj 0413.
He's in our chat right now.
Look at that. Can you talk more about the run game in general? Like, I watched the O-line breakdown, and as much as Saquon's injury is to blame, it seemed like Gallman just had better hole/schemes to get those 3 to 6 yard gains, while Barkley gets hit before the line of scrimmage 75% of the time, it feels like. And then Tim Coffey asks, can you please explain the zone run scheme and talk about why this O-line isn't good at it?
All right, so... save any Saquon takes you have for our Galladay versus Saquon question later, okay?
Sure.
So I think this is a good question by Tim Coffey because it's like we talk about, like, they tried to run a zone scheme last year. It didn't work. They switched to a power gap screen. I think a lot of people just, like, don't kind of, like, know that. So what zone is, it's essentially you're blocking the plays to the right, you're blocking the gap to your right. And what it does is it creates a lot of single blocks, like you one-on-one blocks, and the double teams aren't meant to move a guy. They're meant to move to the next player in the second level. So they're tougher blocks to sustain. But when it's done right, it's beautiful, you know, and it gives running backs more options, you know, where this, the gap scheme, it's very much like this is the hole you're running through. And the Giants have been trying to do some zone stuff, but it just has not been working. Part of that is Saquon's not willingness to not just go, go, go. But anyways, so they're just tougher blocks to sustain. And one reason the Giants can't do it right now is because of Nate Solder, because he's either the front side, where on the front side, he just can't sustain those blocks. He doesn't know how to set, he can't get, you know, get his hips around on the outside zone, and he doesn't set a good edge. You know, when, you know, he doesn't get any push when he is, it's inside zone. And on the backside, whether it's him or tight ends, they are being moved down and they're closing gaps up because they're just, he's not, like, he's getting pushed down like crazy. And so what the Giants have done, they've, you know, they did it a lot towards the end of last year. They're still trying to do some zone stuff because they feel like that fits Saquon better. The gap stuff is pulling, a lot more pulling, down blocks. Like, it's about it's about winning with angles, like true double teams, you know, like moving to the next level. And the Giants run like a play called duo where it's like you're trying to get as many double teams as possible. But it's also very much like this is the gap that you are going through on this play. Or on duo, it's like you're going up, and if the linebacker is left unblocked, isn't aggressive, you hit the hole. If not, you bounce outside. So it's basically those are the differences. But the Giants don't have the offensive lineman right now to run zone. If, you know, Andrew Thomas and Shane Lemieux have the ability, Hernandez could a little bit. But like Price, Solder, they just don't have the guys to do it.
The only play that's really working in the running game is using Caden Smith as like a lead blocker.
Yeah, Powero.
That's the only, it's the only play that's working.
Yeah, it's where they pull and they trap one the defensive end and then have Caden Smith as a lead blocker. It's, you know, as that fullback role.
Yeah.
Because they're not really using Penny as a fullback at all in this year or so far. You know, where last year he got real fullback reps besides the, you know, the fullback handoff at third and one.
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, and so now we're talking about, you know, they went out of the shotgun so much week two, which I'm happy with. Then you're talking about, well, the impact of the fullback goes down slightly, unless you're talking about third and short situations, which they gave some fullback dives to Elijah Penny, which worked on some third and short situations. And third and short is, Giants have typically kind of struggled with that in years past. So Saquon actually had an efficient game, which I guess I'll save that.
Yeah, save it. Lemieux missing is a bigger deal, and also Gallman, to his credit and to his not to against him, was very much like, I'm going to find the smallest like space, the first hole, and I'm going to hit it. And I'm not going to try and break big plays at all. I'm just going to get my 4 or 5 yards and push the pile.
Yeah.
Some people like that, but also it's like he wasn't a good receiver. He fumbled the ball at times. Wasn't a great, like, he didn't do the other things good enough to be that type of running back for what the Giants wanted as a backup to Saquon. He needed volume. Right. And as Saquon Barkley's backup, you're never going to get volume.
Right. All right, next question. Coming from Glock Roach. Jones seemed to play great last game, but what are some things he can further improve on? One thing I noticed was his ball placement on some routes was behind. Example, one of the Galladay passes, the pass to Shep on that very last drive as well.
There was a couple of passes that were a little behind Shep. So that would be one, like, you know, you can always be more accurate. Here's something, and I remember Orlovsky talking about this. Remember it was that third and one play versus the Cardinals, and it was when they punted afterwards, and I was very pissed that they punted because they were down by a couple scores. And they ran stick to the left side, and Caden Smith was open. Remember that? And then, but Jones threw it to Shepard deep. And I like that because I was like, you know what, stop trying to dink and dunk on the field. Like, go for it or go. Orlovsky said something, and something I kind of agree with, is Jones tries to put perfect placement on every ball. Like it's good for him, you know, like he was, you know, the top most efficient deep passer last year because of that. But with a guy like Kenny Galladay, you don't need to get it perfect where he's extending out, you know, like take a little bit off of it with Kenny Galladay. Let him adjust. Let him make that play. You don't have to make the play for Kenny Galladay. Like the play on the right sideline, the Galladay, it was extremely accurate. But there was no adjustment for Galladay, and then the little bit of pass interference or like tug that they didn't call. It's like, well, even if that plays a little bit behind him, Galladay can adjust his body, turn towards it, and make one of those catches. So that would be something. The Slayton one, you know, like it was a Slayton should have caught it, but he could have put that a little less on there. So those would be my things. Do you have anything? Because I actually just want to talk about Daniel Jones in general with this.
That was one of his best career games. And I understand, Bobby, you're a big box score guy. Yeah, he didn't throw for 350 yards. He didn't throw for 5 touchdowns. But when you look at his value in terms of what else was working around him, nobody besides Sterling Shepard was working around Daniel Jones on Thursday.
It's hiding blemishes on this offense is their chemistry.
Yeah, and the fact that Saquon Barkley is not being used in the receiving game. Saquon Barkley had 12 carries for 16 yards besides the 144-yard play, and we didn't even score on that drive. You know, nothing is happening around Daniel Jones that's helping him. There's no yards after the catch, and I guess this can transition to your Jones point. You know, 1.9 yards after the catch per completion on Thursday night, and Daniel Jones threw for 249 yards, and how many attempts did he have? So it was him. It was him and his ball placement that made everything work. And he had a CPOE of like +7, which was one of the best of his career.
Yeah, he had a great game. I just think, like, you look at the Tampa Bay game, that game was better. And you can talk about box score, but it's like those games were better. It was better than the Lions game where he threw 4 touchdowns, you know, and even, you know, better than the Jets game where he also threw 4 touchdowns. But like, I didn't think it was the Tampa game. There was like that touchdown to Shepard in the corner in his zone was impeccable placement. You know, the throw to Slay, like there was, like he played really awesome in that game.
Yeah.
Jones, he looks like he's a better player, you know, and this is kind of where, you know, you are kind of happy with the offense a little bit is this is the issue. You mentioned the yak. That's like those separation numbers and stuff like those separation numbers are so flawed. It's not a value of how good a receiver is. Him and Sterling Shepard's connection is hiding blemishes. Why? Because there's these routes that don't breed yak. But Shepard, like Jones, is anticipating really well. Shepard is breaking them off, making like tough catches. And it is like them connecting on 84% of their passes is hiding like the issues with this offense. Like Garrett ran less stick, but they ran curl, 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 curl. We're even going to talk about Kadarius Toney. The touchdown to Darius Slayton was all curls, and Daniel Jones audibled out to it into a deep pass. You know, so Daniel Jones taking a little more control of this offense. You know, the defensive pass interference on Kenny Golladay? That was stick. That was stick. And then they had the go on the tag, backside tag. I guarantee you, Garrett, when that ball was snapped and Jones didn't throw it to the stick, he was like, what the hell's going on? And then Jones throws it to Golladay and they call the DPI. Like, Jones is kind of taking the offense into his control a little more, you know, where he's like, you know, like this, there's stuff that's not working, you know, and you saw some of the issues when they ran the all curls and stuff. Like, that is not an efficient offense. Now, Jones played well and he completed a lot of those passes, but you can't expect him to be perfectly timed every single week. But he is getting better. He's manipulating the pocket better. I think now that Andrew Thomas has been good, he's a lot better at manipulating the pocket when his front side is bad compared to his play. Like, if you put Andrew Thomas at right tackle and Nate Solder at left tackle, I think Daniel Jones looks a lot worse right now. You know, he seemed to be, you know, taking control of the offense a little more. So he looks good. I think he's a better player, which means this offense, it will be better than last year and he'll score more points. But at the same, like, there's still the same offensive issues in this game. Like, awesome that they added more read option and stuff like that. Like, good on that. There was more stuff that was good. But at the same time, it's like there's a lot of the ugly head, like the ugliness of this offense is still there. You know, they didn't totally change the offense last week.
I mean, you're talking about why this offense is cap is at average and not above average, where even though through the first 2 weeks of the season, they've been an above average offense in terms of how they've moved the ball. You know, they're not putting up over 30 points. You know, they're not going crazy in terms of producing, you know, 400 plus yards, even though I think they had close to 400 yards on Thursday. So they're not going crazy, but you just outlined why this offense is going to be average at best and why, at least in theory, why the offense being average and the offense being like they were on Thursday, why that should lead to a winning Giants team. But it's this defense that is the gray cloud over everybody right now. And that's not a...
I'm not happy with average, though. Like, I want Daniel Jones to be great, and he can't be great in this offense.
No, he can't. But really, why can't we continue to expect Daniel Jones to not be perfect? Because you already did outline
some throws. He's going to throw interceptions this year, you know?
But also, why not expect Daniel Jones to be what Tony Romo was for that Cowboy offense. And I'm not saying Daniel Jones is going to be Tony Romo, because Tony Romo was magnificent. But why not expect that same type of performance where Jones is taking over the offense? Because we saw it pre-injury, and I said this over the offseason, that week 6 to 12 stretch where the Giants offense was working their way up to average, and then boom, he gets hurt during that Cincinnati game right off the bye, and it kind of ruined any momentum that the offense had. But why not expect Daniel Jones to get better, to manipulate the pocket better with better protection on his blind side, and be a dude? Like,
I do expect that.
But you're almost painting it and you're making it sound like it's a bad thing. But it's like, no, that's a good thing. Like, we should expect the quarterback to do that.
Because there's a fixable issue to make it better than that.
Right, but we can't do that. And there's no fixable issue. Why I'm so okay with it and why I'm so, like, invested in, all right, Jones, just do it, bud. You got to put the team on your back. Because the time to do that was January to fire Jason Garrett.
I know.
You know?
I know. It's frustrating.
I know it is. All right, let me read this ad, and then we'll kind of go through some of these other questions. So, autumn is in the air, the pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped, they are here to make sure you don't carve your pumpkins when you're grooming, if you know what I'm saying. Ball joke, make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new 4th Generation Performance Package. Boys, and ladies, if you're listening, if you want to get your guys a Halloween gift. Going to see that movie. Can't wait. Halloween Kills. Get ready for a cuffing season like no other. Ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code GIANTS. Brand new performance package 4.0 includes the Lawnmower 4.0. If you're looking to cozy up this fall, this trimmer is essential. Their 4th generation trimmer, they feature a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. Nobody likes nicks, cuts, or anything. It also gives you the ability to turn 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Plus, it's waterproof, Bobby Skinner. Manscaped even threw in 2 free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. Manscaped boxers and the Shed travel bag. They'll get you comfy on the way home and on the go this season. So get 20% off plus free shipping with the code GIANTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code GIANTS at manscaped.com. Make your balls a priority this fall. Choose Manscaped. Your balls will thank you. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code GIANTS at manscaped.com. Thank you to Manscaped.
All right, next question.
Chris at ChrisKennedy_25. In these first 2 games, what player outside of Andrew Thomas and Sterling Shepard has impressed you guys the most? We'll answer that part first, and then I'll say the second part.
Besides Daniel Jones, now I know he got beat on a big play on Thursday, but that is, you know, that's some of the downfalls of man coverage when you don't get pressure. Tate Crowder looks like the clear inside linebacker next number 2 next to Blake Martinez. He's playing fast. He looks stronger. And there's being more asked of him. You know, the Giants are playing a lot less plus one boxes this year because they're doing the 2 high safety stuff more so. They're rolling down out of it and maybe playing some cover 3, but like their fronts are a lot less, and that asks more out of your linebackers. And it's why Blake Martinez hasn't looked as dominant as he did last year, because there's being a lot more asked out of those guys. So Tate Crowder would be one. And then on offense, Caden Smith. Caden Smith, you know, they used him in the passing game more than flat routes, and you saw it. Like, he caught a pass on 4 verts and 21 yards, and as a blocker, you see all the big plays, and they're usually sprung by Caden Smith. So I think Caden Smith has looked really good.
Yeah, Caden Smith is a phenomenal blocker. He should be used in the receiving game more. And then when Evan Engram comes back, will we involve him more? Since the first 2 games, our tight ends haven't been thrown to, or is that just Garrett's scheme? I do think that the way Caden Smith caught that ball on a crossing route last week, and even Kyle Rudolph catching a ball in the intermediate part, well, not really, it was past the sticks. Kyle Rudolph catching a ball in the middle of the field past the sticks, lining those guys up as wide receivers, I think we should do the same thing with Evan Engram. Like, none of this stick stuff, hand in the ground for Evan Engram. Every play, he should just be lined up out wide. Every play.
Give him crossers. We don't run freaking crossers. It pisses me off so bad. Give Evan Engram crossing routes.
Did it with Caden Smith, and it was a big play. So, there you go.
So, yeah. All right, next question.
Next 2 questions. Sign Bortles. Okay. What's more likely against Atlanta? A Saquon Barkley breakout game or a Kenny Galladay breakout game? And then Danny Pendergast asked, who will have a bigger day against the Falcons, Saquon or Kenny Galladay?
My answer is easily Kenny Golladay. I mean, he had 6 catches, 114 yards versus Atlanta last year. Can I say something? I'm not disappointed with Golladay really so far. You know, like week one, the usage was bad. But this past week, I wasn't too mad about it. It could have been more. There was one time, you know, I outlined in the film review where Daniel Jones should have thrown the ball to him. Not in that final drive of the game, second to last drive of the game, where people were like, well, look, he's open on the backside. It's like, yeah, but that's not part of his read. You know, and that's the issue with all curls is that you're not reading going through progressions. You're reading the defense pre-snap, picking a side and going. Anyways, he had 8 targets in the last game, and if 9, if you include a defensive pass interference. One was on that right sideline where he didn't catch it, and he had another drop on the RPO in the red zone, you know? So I'm not worried about that. I think Kenny Golladay is going to have those big, like, I actually, week two, I was all right with Kenny Galladay's usage. There could be more, but I was fine with it. I don't look at, week one definitely was like, they had 1 target through 3 quarters. That was unbelievably ridiculous. But this past week, I was fine with the way that he was used. And it helped, and it's helping out Darius Slayton, something we talked about. Now, Slayton's had some drop issues, but just as far as like getting open and making big plays, Slayton's been that guy. He should have, you know, he had the 42-yarder versus Denver. You know, he had the touchdown this past week. He should have had another touchdown. Like Slayton has been a benefactor of it, and Shepard looked really good last year. He looks better this year.
Yes, and there was a 19-yard, almost an explosive play that went to Sterling Shepard this past week where Washington ran a lot of cover one.
Safety high.
Yep. Washington ran a lot of cover one, and there was a play where cover one, that safety, even though he was shadowing towards Shepard's side of the field to start, post-snap, that safety goes, and he rolls up to Kenny Golladay, and it leaves the middle of the field wide open for Sterling Shepard. So, yeah,
we're
going to
talk about that play when we talk about Tony, too.
The presence of Kenny Golladay, you know, it's here at times, even when he's not making a catch, and I think there's been some super overreactions on Twitter as to, oh, he wasn't worth it, should have brought back Dalvin. Saw one of those today that made me upset. And really, what it comes down to, Bobby, is I think Daniel Jones, and you mentioned this earlier about Daniel Jones, you know, wanting to put the perfect ball and wanting to put the ball in like the best of spots. Because Kenny Golladay is not a wide receiver that's built on separation, and also Jason Garrett's system is not built on wide receivers getting separation, so, you know, it's a beautiful disaster right there. Even when Kenny Golladay is not open, Daniel Jones needs to learn that he is open. And that is where the chemistry between wide receiver and quarterback comes in, and why I think it's okay that it's taking time for that relationship to form. If Kenny Golladay,
you're on a 4-year deal too, you know, like,
yeah, and if Kenny Golladay had these 2 games with a full summer with Daniel Jones, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But the fact that he didn't have a full summer, they haven't had a lot of reps together, and he's working his way in where there are like that play action RPO little post route towards the middle of the field, that's been the majority of the plays that he's gotten involved, and I'm okay with that. You know, that is a chain mover within itself, and if you can have three or four of those in a game, that's 3 or 4 first downs, and then as we'll go along, we'll get you more involved in the vertical passing game, which that's the hope where you can be that contested catch king that we signed you to do. So that, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, so that's our Kenny Golladay talk. Saquon Barkley, I know you're going to say he was efficient. I thought he looked rude. He is dancing, and I know this has always been a critique of Saquon. He is just dancing behind the line of scrimmage. He is unbelievable. He is so much more indecisive than he was in previous years. He does not look good to me.
I'd agree with you. My eyes agreed with you, certainly. You know, the next-gen data actually had him at 2.66 seconds average time behind the line of scrimmage, which Peyton Barber was the best this past weekend at 2.42. So Saquon Barkley was closer to being more efficient behind the line of scrimmage than not efficient. The efficiency metric actually didn't have him that bad, and his rushing yards over expected per attempt was above average this past week. So his yards before contact is also like less than 1.5 yards. So, you know, while I will, that's the stats, right? My eyes are still saying that he's not efficient, and the fact that he went 12 carries for 16 yards, not counting the 1 carry for 44 yards, that's unacceptable. Can't have that.
Yeah, the offensive line has not been great in the run blocking, but it hasn't been that bad. He has not looked good to me. It's kind of worrisome. But again, yep. I don't want to panic over the first, you know, he had two games in 4 days, so, or 5 days. So, you know, all it takes is one good game and it's like, okay, Saquon's back. He did look more athletic. Like he looked like he trusted himself more this past week than he did, than week one though. So I think that, so maybe week three, it's when it comes together. So
also, can we throw him the ball, please?
He has three catches for like 14 yards. I will give Garrett credit. Remember the throw that Jones almost threw an interception versus Denver? That was a really well placed, really well drawn up play to get Saquon the ball. And just the safety kind of just read Jones' eyes and he almost threw an interception. But besides that, yeah, they have not involved him in the receiving game besides like a screen or a check down at all. At all.
And it's also on Jones. It's
also not on Jones because they're not using him as, like, I'm not talking about getting to him to the check downs quicker. It's like they line him out wide and like put him on a slant. Like, why don't we do that? Like, why does Saquon Barkley never get to run a slant? You know, why is it always, you know, a little backfield out?
Yeah, and also, why is it always that Saquon Barkley and our running backs start as receivers, but then we motion them in as running backs? Why can't we do the opposite? Because then, I mean, that's such a tell as to what coverage a defense could be playing. And when you take your running back from the backfield and motion him out as a wide receiver, does a linebacker follow him? Does a safety come? You know, that could be such a tell for Daniel Jones pre-snap. But why would we make things easier on Daniel Jones? All right, next question. Next two questions. These are paired together. Ron Swanson at Ronnie Swanson 69. Why are the media some clowns? Great question. And then Brian Porras at BPorras1. Isn't it time to put Tony in the slot for some plays and have him as the primary read to use his speed?
Some plays, but like I wouldn't want him, like Shepard's doing a good job. Do you want to talk about on field or off field with Tony first?
Off field. Cause that paints a better picture as to maybe what's going on the field, which is nothing.
I don't know. I'm worried about him. He needs a friend on this team, is what I feel like. I feel like he needs a friend on this team.
Yeah. How can you not think at this point that something may or may not be happening?
He's literally, like, you know, the story that Rosenblatt wrote was accurate, that he is frustrated with the Giants, and I get that, but it's like it's being voiced through, you know, whoever to the media. I don't know. It hasn't been a very bad start, you know, and now it's trickling into the season. So I guess until there's something substantive, you know, happens, that's all we can go with. The some clowns thing was kind of funny. And I do think it's funny the media being like, that's not a very good idea. It's like, well, so you're saying that you're going to write bad stuff about him because he doesn't, you know, kiss your ass.
Mob mentality like, and it's kind of childish.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The media was acting childish, but, you know, they can be childish where we want Tony to not be as childish. But at the same time, the way they're using him on the field, I would be frustrated too if I was him. They played him for 19 reps, which I'm not going to be mad with the use, like the total amount of reps he plays, which 19, if you told me he plays 19 reps, I'm like, two thumbs up. Cool. Nine of them were run plays.
Oh.
So, no, you know, no usage. Five of them were curl routes. Which, for a guy who's not a timing receiver, and you, a route that you need a ton of timing for, it's kind of useless. You know, the curls are still there. And then he had two clear out goes, which is, you know, he's not an option unless he's just uncovered. You know, he's just clearing out, which, you know, that's fine. And there was a dig, which was, I like that. Jones didn't get to him, but I like that. And then they use him on one drag route. And they had Shepard on a crosser, and it led to that Shepard 19-yard catch. And if the linebacker sagged with Shepard, Tony could have had a catch on that play even and gotten yak. That's the way to use him. Don't use him the way you use Sterling. Like the way if you ask him to do what Sterling Shepard does right now, it would be a disaster because Jones and Shepard are on another level right now. They know when exactly a guy's breaking. Jones is anticipating throws. Like they are making some tough ass throws and catches to each other. With Tony, put him on a drag, put him on a crosser, put him through progressions. But it's like if you're gonna use him for 19 reps, use him. Like they just didn't use him. Like the one time they used him, like in a way that you would want to use him, it was a 19-yard catch for Sterling Shepard. Like Kadarius Toney's route led to a 19-yard catch for Sterling Shepard.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on because
they did the exact opposite of last week. Week one, it's like when he's on the field, he is getting the ball. And then the opposite week's like, all right, he's on the field, but he has no involvement of what the offense is, how it's progressing.
Yeah. Same thing with Golladay. You hope it just changes. You hope that it's a, you know, it's a summer of not being used, a summer of not playing, still learning the playbook, still getting things down. And that's the only hope. Where it's so crazy how, you know, Golladay, it's still like a, you know, Golladay actually have hope in that it can work.
I mean,
Golladay
is averaging almost 60 yards per game. Like, right. if that's down, then I feel good about it. If that's right. His down part.
Right. But, you know, but it's the same thing with Saquon, too, where it's like, oh, well, you know, we have to kind of, I'd say two more weeks, we kind of have to wait to have like a necessary conversation. And it's the same thing with Toney. It's like, we gotta still wait to see how kind of things develop, because same thing with Saquon. If Toney has a big play touchdown, then it's like, oh, well, we're all right. We're cool.
And he can. Like, that's the thing. It's like, he can.
But they're not
like,
letting him. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, use him. And don't, like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know? So it's like they, he wasn't even, like, an effective distraction. Like, if you're just talking about them accounting for him being on the field, he's a distraction. But, like, what he was doing wasn't being used that way. So actually use him. Get him involved. You know? And not just, like, manufacture touches. Have him in, you know, second in a progression on a play, not fifth, and make him like, you know, use it. He was drafted 20th overall for a reason. I refuse to believe that this Giants team that had expectations to win now, that desperately needed edge, drafted Kadarius Toney to store him for a year. I just don't believe that. Maybe that's what you think should happen, but the Giants did not draft him 20th overall to not play him this year.
No. You don't do that for any first round pick, really.
Yeah,
so. You shouldn't. Bobby, why don't you? I'm pulling to you this episode. Why don't you read
actually
the last
hold on
stat?
A second? Hold on a second. A simple game of matching answers to trivia questions. What am I talking about, guys? I'm talking about the match five trivia game. I got five on it. You know the five gum, like you got five. Comes with 320 game cards with many different topics, so it's fun for anyone and everyone. You don't even have to be smart. You could be a dummy and play this game, honestly. So it's like 5% of our audience is probably dumb, right, Justin?
I'm one of those 5%.
Yeah, so like I think 5% of our audience is dumb, and sometimes it's like, you know what, this ad reads probably not for you. This one is for you. Some of the cards have sports-oriented questions like name the best five pitchers of all time or name the five best wide receivers of all time. This game creates fun discussions and friendly disagreements. Or unfriendly disagreements if you're like that type of family. It only takes 3 to play and there is no limit. Save 50% off your order now when you use the coupon code JOHNBOY. Get your copy of Match 5 Trivia a game by going to match5trivia.com and it's match, the number 5, then trivia.com and save 15% by entering code JOHNBOY. All right, let's finish this mailbag up.
Yeah, let's finish it up. All right, so second to last question, coming from Brian Walsh at BWalsh06. How much longer until we see Quincy Roche in the pass rush rotation? I mean, here was the inactives from last week. It was Evan Engram, Colin Johnson, Josh Jackson, Sam Beal. Why are we only running with like 3 outside corners? Justin Hilliard, Cam Brown, Quincy Roche. Why is Colin Gillespie activated when Nate Ebner is on the team?
They both play a ton of special teams. Like, they're using both of them, you know?
When Cam Brown comes back, if Cam Brown comes back, which I can't believe we're talking special teams again. If Cam Brown comes back, Colin Gillespie should be inactive, and then they should activate Quincy Roche.
I think Roche, Johnson, and Hilliard are part of just, like, they were brand new to the team, you know? But here's what I'll say is now. Because remember we did that segment in the offseason, like, making the case for every outside linebacker to, you know, start?
Yes.
It seems like they've all made the case for them not to play. Like, Ifedi Odenigbo's gone. O'Shane Zimenez has been a zero. Azeez Ojulari's been the best out of all of them, but it's like, you know, he hasn't, like, been, like, a consistent player. Lorenzo Carter has really added nothing as a pass rusher. He's had some good plays in the run. Carter Coughlin got moved to inside linebacker. Maybe even Carter Coughlin should be in the rotation. So, yeah, I would give Roche... Yeah. I would give Roche the opportunity to take O'Shane Zimenez's snaps.
I agree. And possibly, if Carter Coughlin's only going to play like 4 or 5 snaps as an interior linebacker, then he should be playing more snaps as an edge rusher.
Yeah, he's just small.
That goes without saying.
But if Carter Coughlin never switched to inside linebacker, would you be calling for him to play?
If we had zero edge production, then maybe. Like, we have zero edge production right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. All right, next question.
Mark Reynolds, final one. I believe this is the final one. Yes. Mark Reynolds at r_Enolds. If Gettleman makes one trade for another piece before the deadline, what position would you hope it would be?
This is a pretty easy question, right? Guard? Another guard? Another
guard
interior
edge.
Offensive lineman?
Guard or
yeah,
edge?
Yeah, edge. Edge. If we were like, yeah, that's actually edge. Because you could see a good edge rush. I mean, like a Marcus Golden type. Honestly.
We should trade for Marcus Golden. I mean, he's buried. He's kind of the third guy on that depth chart between Chandler Jones and Hassan Reddick, I think, is still there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Marcus Golden's third on that depth chart. He deserves some more snaps. Maybe he should be a Giant, Bobby Skinner. Marcus Golden would hate. I have a feeling. I didn't hear anything. But I have a feeling that Marcus Golden would hate if that happened.
Well, yeah, of course. It was the team that didn't play him and he got moved. Yeah, that wouldn't
happen.
The team
that didn't pay him, didn't play him, and then traded him.
Yeah. That I mean, that just would never happen. Edge. If there was an edge out there, yeah, that would be it. It's like if we're trying to actually make the playoffs. If we're trying to just survive, guard.
Fair.
All right, that's the show. We'll be back on Friday for our preview of the Falcons game. Go Falcons.
Ooh.
My high school mascot was the Falcons. How about that?
I have a question. We have some time. We're not running very long. You said that if the New York Football Giants lost their football game on Thursday night, that you would be retiring 77-0. Are you going to pull a Justin Penick with Curtis Riley milk challenge and not follow through with that?
I mean, I'm going to do it on the podcast. I might just not. I might stop. I said I'd retire the tweet. I think I'm going to retire the tweet.
Okay. All right. So you're being very lawyer-like right now. Okay. Got it.
Well, that was what I meant. And like, I was, you know, like, I think I'm going to retire the tweet.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Because people on Twitter are stupid. Yeah.
Well, you know how it is. It's like with Joe Judge. It's like we've lost 2 games. And it's like, it's went from like, I really love the way this guy talks and explains things, to now it's like, I hope he dies. Like, I hate everything he says. Every word makes me irritated. And that's what kind of what happens with 77-0. When it's like, all right, dude, we keep on losing. I'm tired of this tweet. I mean, I thought they were going to win. That's why I put it on the line. Because I thought they were going to win.
I thought they were going to win too.
They let me down. So
they did technically win, but they also lost.
And I always get my one... Yeah,
it's one of the stupidest comments I've ever seen.
Yeah, that didn't make
life.
Any sense. There's a one time a year I get a 2-0 prediction. It's just every year there's one week where I'm just extremely down on the team. And that might be week 4 if we lose to the Falcons. So don't lose to the Falcons. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Friday with our Falcons preview. We appreciate you. We'll see you then. And until then, let's go Big Blue.